Hello, you're listening to Gaze Gaze, in which we're gay and we gaze into media that's by, for, or about ladies who love ladies, and sometimes we talk about other stuff. My name is Erin, and I'm entirely myself.
And my name is Erin, and they say if you eated acorns, you can make a wish.
And I'm Samantha. I have some macaroons in my bag already.
Yeah, let's
delicious macaroons.
Oh my goodness.
For a delicious conversation.
A delicious conversation.
About the Danish girl.
Oh. We said we were going to do it, and it's happened. Samantha, I'm so happy you're here.
I have so much I want to say, and almost none of it has to do with the movie. What I will say, just like right off the top, is that I feel like this has cured my Eddie Redmayne. I no longer have any feelings about Eddie Redmayne. I'm like utterly neutral and ambivalent to the man.
That's, wow. Oh my god, I was gonna ask you if 2 years later, if you still had those feelings, but this movie specifically, watching it, killed it?
Oh, absolutely. I, like, feel nothing for the man. He looks like a cartoon character. Like,
he does!
I've always stood by this. He sounds like and looks like a Muppet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially this movie. All the scenes with him crying.
And, you know, I really don't have anything super negative to say about Eddie Redmayne either. He seems just fine. He did say he regretted making this movie.
I
don't
know if you saw that. I did see that.
And he was just like, essentially paraphrase, like, there are a lot of spaces where, like, the right people aren't being invited to the table, and this was an opportunity where I should have stepped back. Or he said something to that effect, so...
I think this movie is, like, very much of the time it was made.
2015?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, 100. I mean, it was, like, was it, like, a year before, like, the trans tipping point?
When's the trans tipping point?
It was, like, specifically, I want to say, like front cover story, I want to say, on Time magazine?
That was Time magazine 2014, so okay. It was a year after that. And, I mean, this is also, The Danish Girl is very obviously a movie, and... by association book, which I did not read the book version, that is about trans people for cis straight people, not other cis queer people, in the same way that, like, way back when we did our episode on Her Story, that was a series that was very much explaining trans women to cis lesbians.
Yeah. I actually think everything that, like, I've guested out of the podcast for thus far, I think all of that has so much more, like, potential for positive or enjoyable viewership from a trans woman's perspective than this. I think this is like bottom of the barrel. Jupiter Ascending was much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
For real. But yeah, should we describe the summary so people can know what they're getting into?
I will, though I will say that this is kind of a half-ass summary in the same way that The Danish Girl is a half-ass summary of Lily Albee's life. You, Samantha, will probably have a lot more to add about the context of Lily Albee's life as differs from The Danish Girl, right?
I didn't do as much or really any research on her actual life, but I looked into a lot of the autobiography that she contributed to and was posted, like, posthumously posted, as opposed to published. And I think the context of, like, that specific book is very interesting. I think it informs how the movie was made and how we as an audience today can kind of, like, deal with this. Because there's a lot to be said about this movie.
Yeah, I don't have, like, significant notes, but I did read some stuff on it. And so I can hopefully help out with that, too.
Okay, yeah, me too. I read a decent amount, but didn't take a ton of notes. So it's all fresh off the dome today. Okay, so The Danish Girl, the movie, is based on a book of the same name, and it is a fictional account or a biopic telling the story of a real-life painter, Lily Albee, and her wife, who was also a painter, Gerda Wegner. And at the start of this film, Lily is a closeted trans woman who's just kind of finding herself. She has a formative moment when Gerda is doing a painting of a ballet dancer, and she asks Lily to stand in as a model. And wearing the stockings, the shoes, and then holding the dress makes her feel something. Later, the two of them go to a party, and when they return home, Gerda undresses Lily to find that she's been wearing her nightgown underneath her clothes. And Gerda also helps Lily get dressed for a party, and that's her first ever time presenting female in public. At that party, she meets a man named Henrik, and he's very intrigued by her. They're sitting and talking, and he grabs and kisses her, and Gerda sees it. Then Lily from there kind of has a fling with him. She never has sex with him. And when he hints that he wants to have sex with her and dead names her to kind of confirm that he knew what her past identity was all along, she just gets up and leaves at that point and ends the relationship. Gerda, at this time, she's feeling like Lily could leave her at any moment, and she's totally heartbroken. She begins drawing Lily, her muse, a beautiful redheaded woman, and she starts telling people that it is her husband's cousin. Her paintings take off. The couple leaves from Denmark to Paris, where Gerda's art is being exhibited in a gallery. And their relationship once in Paris becomes strained as Lily spends more and more time presenting female. Gerda says that she misses her husband and begins building a budding relationship with Hans, who's an old friend of Lily's and who is also now living in Paris. Lily is attacked at the park by two transphobic men in a situation that never occurred in real life.
I was going to say, I was watching that scene. I was like, this didn't happen.
That did not happen. Okay. I did read that on like the Wikipedia that was totally falsified.
Okay. Good. And also, when we're talking about things that didn't happen, also Hendrik was fictionalized for this movie. He's not a real person.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, what the fuck?
I know.
Pissing me off.
I know. So after Lily is attacked, Hans is the one who treats her wounds, and he also tells her that she should consider seeing a doctor, not just for the injury she sustained, but also for her mental health. He offers to help her find one, and she sees multiple doctors who diagnose her with homosexuality, with schizophrenia, and doctors that recommend lobotomies. However, Gerda, her wife, has one more doctor who has been recommended by a friend. And Lily tells the doctor that she believes that she's a woman inside, and Gerda says, yeah, I believe that too. The doctor says he thinks that they're both probably right, and that he can do an experimental surgery. So Lily has her first bottom surgery, and then she's in a lot of pain afterwards. She and Gerda actually end up moving back from Paris back to Denmark, and Lily gets a job at a department store selling perfume. They sleep with a curtain separating their bed at night.
I wasn't sure if that was like a thing of like we're trying to lower the like potential of like infection, or if it's a thing of like, oh, we are not wife and wife.
I think that was just symbolism for that, for what you're getting at.
That's
like,
super cool. Yeah. I'm really happy that they did that to the... Okay.
Yeah. So after moving back, Lily ends up running into that old fling of hers, Henrik, from the start of the movie. And she tells him that she has had surgery to, quote, correct a mistake of nature. And he is once again intrigued by her. She says that it's not a serious relationship, though, because he's a homosexual. And as a woman, obviously, they wouldn't be together. Fair enough. Lily tells Gerda she's going to travel back to Paris to get a second operation, which would be a vaginoplasty. And Gerda says that Lily is way too sick after the first operation and that Lily should wait. Lily, however, says she's going to go ahead anyway, and she'd like Gerda to come with her, but Gerda refuses. And the night before the surgery, Lily's meeting with the doctor when Gerda walks in. She decided to come after all. So Lily has the surgery, but it really does not go well. She has a terrible fever, and Gerda's caring for her at her bedside. Suddenly, she seems to be doing a little bit better, and she asks to be taken out to the garden, where she passes away while talking with Gerda. And after that, Gerda and Hans travel to the scene where Lily is always painting the trees. And once there, Lily's scarf flies away in the wind. And that's the end of the movie.
I got pretty emotional when the scarf got picked up by the wind. I'm not going to lie, guys.
Oh.
I didn't. I'm sorry.
That was a lie. I can see Samantha's face in real life. That one was
Dude,
not real.
Okay. I will admit. I was like, I'm very surprised, but I'm touched that you were touched. Oh my God. My experience of watching this movie was like watching the beginning and seeing Lily and her wife being cute together and like immediately going and looking up the paintings of them that were done together, which like, seeing the paintings really made me emotional because I was like, oh my God, two lesbians like together and they're like so beautiful. And like, this is obviously like paintings done for the female gaze by the female gaze. Like,
yes.
I was like, I was eating it up. And then the rest of the movie happened and I got pissed the fuck off.
Yeah.
There was a point in the movie where I couldn't look at the screen and I was just enamored with my phone because I was looking up Gerda's art.
Yeah.
And all the, like, lesbian erotica she made, and, like, all the paintings that, like, she did of, like, Lily and them together and whatnot. Like, this movie has many flaws, obviously. even just down to the casting of Eddie Redmayne, which is, like, very obvious. But, like, I think one of the biggest ones is that at the beginning they have that scene where, like, Gerda is, like, doing a portrait of this man and talking about, like, how uncomfortable it is to be, like, to yield to the women's gaze and everything. And then the movie just, once Lily becomes a character and, like, starts kind of transitioning, the movie treats her as, like, this, like, sexless object that Gerda could never be attracted to or romantically interested in, which is just not based in any sort of reality.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk for 1 second about the Eddie Redmayne casting decision. Okay,
yeah.
So I learned that there were a lot of people ahead of Eddie Redmayne on the list.
Oh, really?
So let me walk you through the timeline of different people that got casted and backed out before Eddie Redmayne ended up in the role. So number one, Nicole Kidman. Samuel almost did a spit take.
What?
Nicole Kidman was number one.
Things they took from us.
And then she left. And then it was Charlize Theron.
Well, oh, are you kidding me?
Who ended up getting replaced by... Oh, okay, wait. Hold on 1 second. Nicole Kidman was set to play Lily. While Charlize Theron was set to play Gerda.
Okay.
And then Charlize Theron, again cast as Gerda, was replaced by Gwyneth Paltrow. And at the time that Nicole Kidman got replaced, she got replaced by Uma Thurman.
What?
Wow.
Women of all time.
I know. And then randomly from Uma Thurman, we get Eddie Redmayne. How that happened, I'm not entirely sure. However, one thing I did learn is that Eddie Redmayne was cast for this role while filming Jupiter Ascending. And said that he spoke with Lana Wachowski about the experience of being a trans woman.
Stop it.
And he said, Lana, quote, told me where to start reading and where to start educating myself.
I want the reading list so bad.
Lana Wachowski is like being a trans woman reading list.
So bad.
Yeah.
Because we don't have enough time to get into this, but like, I have a lot of complicated feelings about the Wachowskis. Does not begin or end at the Dreads, but I think that they have some very, like, not amazing and very bad ideas about, like, transness that kind of bother me, because I feel like, didn't they perpetuate the idea of, like, the rule about, like, don't tell eggs that they're eggs or whatever?
I don't know.
There's, like, a specific, like, I can't think of it. The egg protocol or something, I want to say.
What?
I don't know. But I hate to speculate, but I'm going to ask you to speculate anyway.
Okay.
What do you think could have been running through Lana Wachowski's mind when little Eddie Redmayne walks up and is like, I'm going to be you in a movie?
I almost wonder if she had a similar reaction that I had years ago that I no longer have, where maybe she was also down with the sickness and had Eddie Redmania and was thinking, like, if this gets her to take estrogen.
The Eddie Redmania being like, I see something in Eddie Redmayne, potentially.
Following the egg protocol, apparently. Yeah.
Like, I can't tell her. Yeah. But...
I can't tell her, but I can tell her to read some Susan Stryker, Julia Serrano, go to Susan's place. You know she told her to go to Susan's place. Him. I've got it.
You're already she-hearing Eddie Redmayne.
I'm getting it again.
Yeah. Anyway, I just thought that that was wild that we went from the Nicole Kidman to Uma Thurman to
the
Eddie
movie that we could
like
have
that.
Had. I
like
honestly...
the downward slope.
For real. How did they go from, like, okay, let's actually do this character justice and, like, have a woman portray her to let's get Eddie Redmayne to do it?
It literally just transphobia. It has to be.
Yeah, yeah. It, like, has to be.
Well, I mean, part of it, too, is the fact that Eddie Redmayne, the director, worked with Eddie Redmayne prior. And Les Miserables.
Oh, duh. Yeah. Remind me again what the name of the director is.
I want to say it's like Toby Hooper.
Hooper, yes.
I don't know if it's Toby, though.
It is Hooper, for sure. Sammy was just telling me in the car, I forgot to look up any information about the director, quite honestly. But that he's the guy who made the Les Miserables movie and also the Cats musical.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Tom Hooper.
What a career.
Also The King's Speech, which I saw as a child with my mother, and I remember liking it.
I've heard that that's a pretty good movie, actually. I've never seen it.
I'm not, like, saying people I support it now, to be clear.
Okay, yeah.
But I'm just saying a child.
Yeah, people do love that movie.
Yeah. Didn't that come out around the same time as this? Like, maybe a year later?
I feel like it was a year or two earlier, even.
There was time that, like, Tom Hooper was really, his career was based on Oscar bait. Between Les Miserables, The Danish Girl, and the King's Speech. I feel like all of those were jonesing for... King's Speech was 2010.
Oh, wow. That long ago.
I kind of want to talk about the casting of Eddie Redmayne a little bit further. I think it kind of leads into this interesting idea. I did a decent amount of research, not about the movie, but about, like, how Lily Elbe is, like, kind of how we can understand her in terms of, like, trans context and, like, media today. A couple years ago, I picked up this really great book called Shimmering Images, Trans Cinema, Embodiment, and the Aesthetics of Change by Eliza Steinbach. It's, like, trans, like, film theory. Eliza Steinbach's, like, this great trans academic. And in the first chapter, they talk about the multimedia autobiography that Lily Elbe, like, wrote and was, like, published, like, posthumously. And they make a lot of really interesting points about that and how it relates to film. And one of the things they talk about is how photographs are kind of a little bit, like, problematic for thinking about, like, capturing one's, like, gender and self, in that a photograph kind of frames it as being, like, very static and in place, whereas, like, gender and the body is always in flux and changes. And talks about a lot of the photographs that were included in this, like, multimedia autobiography. One of the interesting things about it is that initially, when it was published in Denmark, in Danish, it only had 2 photos, and then it was translated to several other languages. I think it was translated to German, and then more photos were added, and then into English, and the American version, I think, has, like, 16. And so every time it got translated, it got more and more photos, and they talk about, like, the reason why Lily made this book was that they wanted to try to regain control of, like, the narrative that was being put out about them. And they kind of, even in, like, trying to do that and attempt that, they lose sight of that with this, like, multimedia book project. There's, like, 6 different conflicting voices in it. It's part, like, theatrical, like, teleplay almost, like, with, like, this, like, third-person narrator. It's part, like, medical dossier. It's also, like, a lot of, like, letters Lily wrote and all these photos.
Yeah, it also included stuff from her diary.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just this, like, absolute hodgepodge of things. And I think it's in one way, like, distancing Lily. I mean, one of the things, too, is, like, the American version of it, and I think other versions as well, changed all the names of, like, Lily and everyone else. So it really becomes, like, a book that's kind of about the idea of the sex change surgery. I mean, the book was literally, the title was Man into Woman. And they talk about that at the end of the movie. Like, that's the note that it ends off on, is the publishing of this book that the movie isn't even based on.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot to be said about how there's this complex set of ideas that it's just, like, incredibly hard to kind of grasp the true or actual narrative of this particular trans woman. And it's really hard for historically any trans person, especially trans women, to control the narratives that are placed onto them.
Yes.
Also, some of, like, what was written, like you said, was about controlling the narrative, and also just kind of giving this, or having also to present, though, in a certain way in order for her to get, like, legal recognition for her gender and stuff. And so apparently in Man into Woman, she kind of specifically is like, oh yeah, me and my wife, we're just friends, like, it's not sexual, we're just gal pals. But, like, if she had said anything otherwise, because the idea of being transgender was so heteronormative at that point, like, they probably wouldn't have recognized, like, her name change and her sex change, because it was like, well, you're married to a woman, so you can't be a woman. So, like, that, like, the fact that, like, she, to me, it's like, okay, she definitely had to hide that part of herself in order to, like, get the legal name change and everything like that. And then this movie comes along and is like, and now we're gonna hide that again and just totally erase it. Like, like, fuck, it hurts.
And yet at the same time, like, we can tell that they had a very intimate and close relationship. You can look at Gerda's art and see it's all lesbian art. It's all lesbian erotica.
Seriously.
Like, all of it is. And so then this movie again tries to, it, like, not only desexualizes their relationship, but then it still promotes it as, like, their relationship as being superior to all of the other relationships that either of them had in their lives too. So a big difference from movie to real life, and also a difference from the movie to the novel. Even in the novel, Gerda and Hans stay together in, like, a romantic relationship. In real life, Gerda was not with Lily when Lily died.
Really?
Yeah, she was not with Lily when Lily died. They had separated at that point. The reason that Hooper de-emphasized like the whole Han storyline and then also rewrote Gerda into being with Lily when she died is that he thought that Gerda and Lily's relationship should essentially have been rewritten to be like kind of like this perfect altruistic lesbian relationship about like two people who were in love with one another, and that it was like the ultimate thing in either of their lives, which I do think is likely true, but also both of them had relationships with men at other points in their lives. Also, it was not that Lily had two surgeries and died on the second surgery during a vaginoplasty. It was that Lily had had five surgeries and died at the point of having a uterine transplant, an experimental uterine transplant, because she was in a relationship with a man and wanted to be able to have his child. And it's not as sexy of a story for film and for an Oscar bait movie.
Yeah.
Not at all.
It's way more complex, as queer people have really complex lives.
So I went to the special collections at my local university library, and I took a look at Man into Woman, the American version. It did contain several photographs. That was like a really like big part of the book. Reading it is insane. I only like paged through it. I didn't read the whole thing, obviously. But they do make mention of like Lily consenting to Gerda like remarrying a man, and that like legally her marriage with Gerda was like nullified upon her surgery, which is very interesting.
Yeah, it was their marriage was annulled by the king.
Yeah.
At the point that she had her surgery. And I think that that was also perhaps like a special circumstance because of the fact that she was one of the first people to have a gender affirming surgery.
Yeah.
Lily was issued a woman's passport as well, which is like pretty crazy. And I also want to point out that they talk about this in Shimmering Images and in the like autobiography, which doesn't really function as an autobiography because it has so many voices, but that's just what I'm calling it. Where she got her name, they do talk about this in the movie, but they don't present it very well, is the Elbe River, which is like Lily has to take a bridge over to cross into Dresden to go to the women's clinic to get these surgeries. A lot of interesting ideas there. One, the fact that like she had these surgeries performed at a women's clinic and it was totally fine. I know that's very like politicized issue now about like trans women being in like women's hospitals and like,
oh my god, a woman in a woman's hospital.
I know. What has this world come to?
Yeah.
And there's this interesting passage that's in that biography that says that where Lily herself, this is actually one of the things that she wrote, is that she wanted to be a bridge between the abyss of like man and woman. And Steinbach kind of reads into this as being, like, almost, like, non-binary. There's a lot of, like, really interesting language of, like, Lily not totally being able to, like, come to terms with, like, losing Einar. And, like, she begins talking about herself in the third person. It's all very interesting. But just, like, the bridge is a very, like, vocal point. Specifically, like, the stream and, like, the idea of being, like, fluid and not, like, static, like, land and gender and all that. And I think the movie, like, tries really hard to present that. It begins with these like landscape shots of like Copenhagen, and like there's so much like attention paid to like the river and everything, but I think the movie's ultimately like really just incurious and dumb and doesn't know how to handle any of its subject matter.
Yeah,
it's very heavy-handed.
Yeah,
it's so heavy-handed. Oh my god, even the what the fuck was up with the like the parallels of like Gerda being like, I'm on my period, and then Lily later is like, I'm having stomach cramps monthly and my nose is bleeding. Where the fuck did they get that?
I don't know. There, I did read that there was some, there's been some publishings out there that have claimed that Lily may have been intersex.
Yeah, I saw that too.
And that when they removed her testes, they were actually ovaries. However, I also would not be surprised if that is just like yet another way of trying to justify performing an operation for a trans woman at this time.
Yeah, it because there's so many voices in that biography, and the biography is the closest thing we have to an actual text to understand the truth of Lily Elbe. They also talk about that, and that like the doctor discovered that she has like internal like female organs, putting air quotes around that. No, you can't see that on the podcast. Yeah. So there is like a lot of thought that like she was intersex, and I think that especially at the time there's a lot of crossover and overlap to how all of this is understood, both like just like cis gay people, intersex people, and trans people.
Yeah.
Because this would have only been like a couple years after like Well of Loneliness, and like that was kind of like the tail end of like inversion theory, which is all like very kind of in like the similar strain of thought. I also wanted to say the Magnus Hirschfeld played like a role in getting Lily to see the doctor that would ultimately perform these surgeries for her. And like that's feels very relevant to me, like because Hirschfeld was like so important to trans history and like discovering and like kind of like researching these surgeries and caring for trans people. Obviously the Hirschfeld clinic was like destroyed by like the Nazis in World War II, so a lot of this information is like lost to time and to fascism. And I think in a lot of ways this movie's really indicative of that. I think this movie really has nothing to say. And I don't think that it's any more progressive or any more heartfelt than this, like, very, like, spectacleized, like, biography was when it came out.
Yeah. I guess I was reading, too, that, like, apparently when these surgeries were happening, that in the news it was kind of sensationalized as well. And Lily was seen as, like, this, like, curiosity, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the cultural interest in Lily as, like, a object of spectacle is kind of cyclical. One of the things that's, like, written about, I believe, in Transgender History by Susan Stryker is that around the 1950s, there were a lot of, like, mass-produced paperbacks kind of trying to ape off of the popularity of the Christine Jorgensen story, and one of those was, like, a new edition of Man into Woman. So I think the way that we understand Christine Jorgensen is very much tied into Lily Elbe. I mean, even to the fact that a lot of people confuse which one was the first to have the first sex reassignment surgery. And
even this movie confuses it.
And it wasn't, am I wrong, wasn't it neither?
Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay, so yes, it was neither of them. It was not Christine Jorgensen or Lily Elbe. So it was actually Dora Richter, who is a German trans woman.
Shout out to Dora.
At Magnus Hirschfeld's Institute for Sexual Research.
Makes sense. That guy was kind of like leading the field.
It says that after a vaginoplasty in 1931, it's unclear what happened to her at any point after her in her life and after 1939. They don't know the cause of her death. They don't know the date of her death.
And I wonder how much of that is connected to like the destruction of that institution.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's one of the things is like, there's so much information that we just don't have now as a direct result of Nazi Germany destroying that information. And it's like a real significant loss. And so even with all of these conflicting narratives and kind of like the way that Lily Elbe is like rendered into this object, I think that there is still this like very palpable aural quality to her as like a historical figure for trans and queer people, even if like there is that significant distance between understanding her.
Yeah.
She's really pretty.
Yeah. she is so beautiful. That was another thing I found interesting about this movie is that, like, in real life, when she died, she was 49. And in the movie, she's depicted as, like late 20s, I would say, at the most. Like,
we
she's
can't
aged
rapid
down.
Age. Yeah. Eddie Redmayne. Maybe if we had cast Nicole Kidman, we could have de-aged her.
I, like, am never going to stop thinking about that. The fact that Nicole Kidman could have been the Danish girl.
The Danish girl.
Even though she technically isn't. We were talking about this, but, like, no. The only time Danish girls, like, those words are spoken in the movie is when speaking about Gerda. This movie is about Gerda, and I think that sucks.
It is, yeah.
I do want to talk about Gerda, though, too. Gerda in this movie, her depiction in this movie is ass, too.
Yeah.
So, like, the thing about Gerda in this film is that it's, like, Gerda is kind of shown as, like, I empower my transgender wife, but I'm not interested in her. Like, I wish I had my husband back. That's why I'm gonna get with this guy, Hans, because I need to be with a man. That, like, really, from everything that I can see, was really not the case in Gerda Wegner's actual life.
Yeah.
After she and Lily split, which, like I said, they did split, she continued drawing lesbian erotica. She did get married to a man after that. Hans, as a character, was loosely based on that man. However, they did get divorced, And I think there's a strong implication that she may have gotten married out of feeling it was necessary to survive.
Yeah.
Very common for women at that time. And when she died alone, broke, and an alcoholic, too.
Yeah.
And had a really, really hard life after separating from Lily Elbe. And obviously, we don't get to see any of that. We see, like, ooh, but what if she ran off with this man and lived happily ever after?
Yeah.
And healed from losing Lily. Which I don't think also ever happened for her. It's very obvious that Lily was her muse, and that that's where she pulled her inspiration for her art from.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Ugh.
The movie doesn't even... no, go ahead, sorry.
No, she just went... like, really quietly.
There's this... Now I can't find the name of it, but there's this one painting by Goethe where it's like... it's her and Lily, and they're, like, looking out over this vista where there's some, like, cityscape, but then also the ocean and some palm trees. And then in the corner, you can see their little white dog. And it's like, oh, drives me fucking nuts. I'm like, ugh, lesbianism of it all.
And the movie doesn't even, like, treat, like, a lesbian attraction or almost any kind of attraction to Lily as a possibility.
I know.
The movie is, like... It was almost interesting and, like, upsetting. Not almost, it was upsetting. But it was, like, bizarre to me. The way that the film is, like, so much more interested in treating Eddie Redmayne as, like, a sexual object pre-transition and only pre-transition.
Yeah.
And I really thought it was going to be the opposite. I really thought it was going to be much more sexualized, like, once, like, Lily starts coming into the forefront. But they completely desexualize her.
Yeah.
They do. They get rid of a lot of her agency as well.
Yeah.
She, like, doesn't leave the house. She, like, doesn't do anything. Like, she isn't... At least other people who tell her to go to the doctor. And, like, it seems really odd. And it bummed me out because for the first 20 minutes, it's, like, kind of a fun little lesbian romp with, like, Goethe... like, helping Lily get dressed and do her makeup and, like, going to the party together. And they, like, go into the ballet studio where there's a bunch of, like, costumes and stuff and find things for Lily to wear there. Like, that stuff. And they're, like, prancing around together. That was really cute.
Yeah. This movie, though, it's been desexualized to the point that I didn't even realize that it was going to be a lesbian movie until Samantha brought it up and was like, we should do that for the podcast. And I was like... is there anything sapphic going on in that? And Samantha was like, duh. And I was like, wait, where?
I thought you were the one who told me, because I didn't understand that this was a lesbian movie until you told me.
Maybe we Googled it.
We might have Googled it.
We might have Googled it and found out together. Because, like, there's just, I feel like it's set up so that a cishet audience, which is clearly the intended audience here, walks away not thinking that trans lesbians are real.
Yeah. Even though they were, from the very start.
Yes.
From the beginning, trans lesbianism. And, like, I had such an idea of what this movie could or should or would have been. And I was so excited to get out of here and talk about, like, I think there's a lot of interesting things to talk about, like, cis for T lesbian relationships. Like, I recently got into one and it's really happy, but it's also, like, kind of interesting going to that from, like, being a T for T girl for a while. And, like... there's a lot to be said about that, and I think it's cool when media depicts that in a way that's, like, interesting. This movie just is not interested in depicting that as a possibility at all.
Samantha, she might be getting into your chicken.
I'm sorry, you want to put this on the desk?
Yeah.
My AirPod fell out. Let me
you thought that we had one guest star today? No, we have two. Sammy and Chili, and maybe even the chicken.
Yeah, three.
Yeah, honestly.
The fried chicken is their own guest.
I also, the first quarter of this movie is by far the most fun that the movie ever is. Or the closest it ever gets to being fun. And even with that, it, like, I have a lot of problems with it. The way that, like, dressing begins, like, being introduced to Lily is so pulpy. As somebody who's read a lot of forced feminization fiction... this is, like, by the numbers, like, can you pose for this painting?
No, I was just gonna say, I was reading that this movie was somewhat controversial for people interpreting it as a force femme piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I when I was a child and I was looking up like forced fem movies on the internet, one of the ones that was very often recommended was The Danish Girl. I actually think this movie, the movie isn't even like problematic in terms of like presenting Lily as this like distinctly like very easy to like label binary trans woman. The movie feels so much more interested in like depicting her as like a forced feminization subject than a trans woman, and I think that that's really interesting, especially like the body language of Eddie Redmayne when he's holding or touching female clothing in like the beginning of the movie is like it renders it into like this like fetish object.
Yeah,
it's really uncomfortable.
Ugh. Well, and then there's also the scene where Lily goes to, I don't know exactly what the destination is, but it's like a sex worker location.
Yeah, it's like a peep show.
Yes, yes, peering through a window watching a woman like get undressed, and she's like mirroring her actions, and the woman at first is like, oh, like no, like stops what she's doing, and then she just kind of keeps doing it, and Lily's just like off doing her thing. But it's like that also is an odd scene in that context and in that discussion of force from like,
yeah, there's a lot of like very like typical, see, like learning how to walk in heels, like,
yeah.
This movie is so, the only thing that like is separating this movie from like a pulpy like 1960s like forced feminization like novel is like a leg shaving scene.
Yeah.
That's it, truly.
Instead, we got the pantyhose.
We got the pantyhose. I just want to look at my notes real quick. I actually want to show this to you, Aaron. The just the talking scene in all caps.
Oh my god, I put that out of my brain.
Aaron, that one just made me literally slap my hand over my mouth. Like, I forgot about that. I also put that out of my brain.
When Eddie Redmayne was filming this, he should have been like, you know what? I shouldn't be doing this.
No, the talking scene, I think, is, like, it feels very Silence of the Lambs and, like,
yeah. Just... Can I just say?
Totally. Yeah.
If Nicole Kidman was there.
That's the thing, too. I wonder, because they do a cut, and I didn't do any research about the production of this movie. I don't know. Do you know if it's a, like, body double for the penis?
I don't know.
Or is it actually Eddie Redmayne's, like, meat?
I did not look that up. I don't want to Google Eddie Redmayne penis.
Eddie Redmayne sheet.
Oh my god, I wish I could make the title of this episode or Eddie Redmayne penis.
I think you could make that the title.
I want to be really, really clear as well, because I think, like, I want to critique the way that the film presents these things in, like, a trans woman earlier pre-transition as being, like, fetishistic. But I also want to say and, like, defend that, like, I think some of these behaviors are normal or common amongst like pre and early transition mm-hmm. like trans women. Like, when you don't have access to women's clothing, you oftentimes like feel forced to get them from whatever options you have available, which is oftentimes like borrowing things from family members without like telling them or asking mm-hmm. them, or like doing things like the tucking scene. And like, but I think the movie, I mean, the talking scene literally has, like, horror score, like, playing behind it. It is like, look at this monster rendered, like, before the mirror.
It's the same thing with the peep show scene, because how that goes is Lily goes in, and she's watching this woman, like, undress and kind of touch herself sensually, and she starts mirroring her movements, and then at first the sex worker, she stops, but then she's like, oh, okay, I'm into this. And then so they start, like, doing kind of, like, this mirror stuff. But then as soon as the sex worker, like, goes to touch her, like, private parts and Lily mirrors that, Lily, like, pulls her hand away, like, oh, God, horror. Like, it's just, like, it's lame. I don't know.
Yeah, it's okay, can I share a fun and unnerving statistic with you all?
Please.
Sure.
Box office weekend, The Danish Girl. 67% of the audience is over the age of 40.
Yeah, that checks out.
That makes so much sense. That makes so much sense.
And I also want to say that, and I also want to give the context of, like, the way that being trans is talked about in this movie is dangerous to promote to a 40 plus year old cisgender heterosexual audience. Like, I think about Lily consistently talking about herself being like, I'm a totally different transformed person than I used to be. Like, and that it is a totally rational mentality for trans people to have, especially in this era. However, mm-hmm. I would say that today it's less common for trans people to have that mentality. And when a lot of the time, the only information about trans people that older cis people is getting is from historical fiction, it gives an inaccurate representation of the today's struggles for trans people. And I personally just wish that there was more modern media about trans people that an older cis audience was interested in.
Well, I have really good news for you. I have extremely good news for you. I was recently at the Milwaukee Film Festival, and we screened this like brand new movie that came out last year called 20,000 Species of Bees. It's like this French film. It's about this like little, like, I believe like 8-year-old who realizes that they're like a trans girl. And it's like about like this like week that they like have a vacation with their family in like rural France, and they like discover these feelings, and she begins to like express that and like wear like girls' clothing and like chooses her like name and everything. And I went and saw that on a random day, and the theater was full of like seniors, and they were audibly very emotionally like moved by it, and like very in support of this like young girl, and like saying like, call her by the right name, call her the right front. Like, they were like very like radically like for this, and
that's good.
That makes me feel a lot better. Makes me feel a lot better that like within about 10 years we have gone from like the Danish girl to this. And mind you, 20,000 Species of Bees is not like the like Oscar bait hit that Danish Girl was at the time. It's like a more niche, like, you know, French film, but
still,
it makes me feel better that there's at least more options now than there were 10 years ago.
I'm gonna be real with you guys, I keep forgetting that the Danish Girl was made like 10 years ago, and I keep thinking it was made like yesterday.
It could have been. It easily could have been.
Yeah, because you, Sammy, this, I almost never think about the difference in our ages.
Uh-huh.
Except for when you're like, I heard about the Danish Girl when I was a child. And I'm like, I was 21 when that movie came out. I was
16.
Smirnoff on the weekends.
I was 16. So I guess I wasn't like a child, but like teenager.
Yeah.
This movie's so fascinating to me.
Oh yeah. I just, along with like the thought process around like 40-year-olds watching this, I also think it's a huge disservice that this is presented as a biopic when it really isn't.
It's a fictionalized account of a real person.
Yeah. And also the depiction of like the surgeries that Lily goes through, they give Eddie Redmayne this like death makeup, basically, which is really disturbing. I don't know. It's like she, you should be fucking clapping. Like, she had 3 successful surgeries in fucking the 1930s. Like, it's incredible. I mean, like, the last one did kill her. It killed her 3 months afterwards. Like, her body rejected the uterus. But like, honestly, kind of incredible that they were able to do that at all.
Yeah, and again, that she had 5 surgeries, and all of them she'd been doing great with before.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure that there were some medical complications that come with going through an experimental surgery. However, like, she was living her life. She was falling in love.
Yeah, she like lived as a trans woman in Copenhagen. She was able to like walk and like roam the streets as like a woman, and like people who knew her prior to transitioning didn't recognize her. Like, she had this like fulfilling life that I think the movie just like does not seem interested in depicting at all. And I think the movie depicts it as like almost this like Icarian tale where she flew too close to the sun and like wanted like a vagina so bad that it killed her, and like the surgery so dangerous.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, I mean, it was like, obviously it was an experimental surgery, but it went well.
Yeah. Where it started to go south was when they implanted an ovary. Which also makes me wonder, if they implanted an ovary, why are they saying that she naturally had ovaries? Just going to throw that out there, too. But they implanted an ovary, and then later again, when they went in to also implant a uterus, which was incredibly way more experimental.
Yeah, that would still be considered experimental.
Yeah. Still has not been done successfully yet.
I think it was recently done in Australia, actually. Let me look that up. Yeah.
There was some news about it, I heard. Speaking about Lily's, like, how we speculate about her, like, body and, like, anatomy. I did take a picture of this passage from the introduction of Man into Woman. because I thought it was funny. He began to study books on sexual pathology and gradually came to the conclusion that although his external organs were those of a male and quite normal, parentheses, though perhaps rather underdeveloped, which is, like, a crazy thing to say. Like...
Why? And also, they did include that scene in the movie of going to the library and reading all the books.
And inversion theory, does not come up in that at all, which I think is crazy. There's a lot of really good passages in the book.
I'm so sorry. Now I'm thinking also about the scene where they take Eddie Redmayne and they irradiate his penis.
Oh my god, I forgot about that.
That I believe is real.
Oh my god. That when that happened, I was like, they did that to that poor woman. And then I went and looked it up, and yes, they did. Which is, oh my god.
I know.
Okay, and also I've been just very, I'm like looking up headlines basically, so like don't quote me on anything. But it looks like there has been 2 successful uterus transplants. They have been with cis women who their uteruses weren't functional for whatever reason. Or I guess I said 2 successful transplants. No, there have been 2 successful births with uterus transplants. Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. So, you know what? We're getting closer.
Yeah.
We are getting closer, but the movie asserts that, like, this idea that, like, it's the
vaginoplasty.
The vaginoplasty that is, killed, like, her. Yeah.
Yeah.
When
It wasn't.
That it actually wasn't great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think she had 5 surgeries in the span of less than 2 years, by the way, which is also a very, very, that's a lot.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of cool. I think it's kind of cool of her that, like, she was this, like, extremely famous, successful, like, painter with, like, this, like, very sexual lesbian relationship with her wife, who was also just, like, super into, like, getting these experimental surgeries just because, like, she could. You know what I mean? Like, I think that that's pretty badass. And I think the movie doesn't present it that way. The movie presents it as, like, this, like...
horrible thing.
This desperate, like, horrible thing that, like, how could she do this to herself? It's like, nah, actually, that's, like, punk as hell.
Yeah.
Like, she was super cool. There's, like, photos in the biography of her hanging out, like, with, like, other women and, like, just... she seemed to live this great life.
Yeah.
I know. And we only get to see this really sad snippet of it.
Yeah.
That's falsified.
Yeah, that's falsified. And also, the framing of the movie also, it starts with one of their friends asking Lily, oh, hey, are you guys, like, having a baby yet? And then it ends with, like, one of the final scenes is Lily is at the women's hospital, and there's a woman being like, I'm about to give birth. What about you? It just, like... damn, she had a whole life. The women are always reduced to just like, hey, you having a baby or whatever.
I mean, what else is there to do?
That's true, actually.
That's the reason I transitioned, is because I want to have a baby.
You know what? There's more to life, Sammy. You can also have a gay podcast.
That's, you know what? Or a Neopets account.
Or a Neopets account.
Oh, wow. And on Neopets, it's really easy to change your gender.
All you have to do, you pick from a drop-down.
Really?
You can be male, female, or other.
Or other, wow.
And then if you want to change your Neopets gender, you just hit them.
You can zap them with a lab ray.
You fight the lab ray scientist, or you get hit by his laser.
There's Force 5 in Neopets?
Yeah, but your Neopet cannot be other gender. Your Neopet can only be a boy or a girl.
That's
sorry.
Fuck.
So you're going to have a difficult decision when you're making the Neopet the Danish
girl. Oh, please. Please. They're not difficult.
If your sex is female for your Neopet, they are forced feminized with eyelashes. You can't be a girl and not have eyelashes, and you can't be a boy and have eyelashes.
However,
unless you get a special item.
Dare I say, you can be a transgender royal Neopet, though.
That's true.
Okay, so if you paint your Neopet royal to turn them into a king or queen, that is dependent on their gender. However, if they get zapped by the lab ray scientist, the mad scientist, then their gender will change, but their appearance will stay the same. So you could be, for example, a king, a girl king.
Wow.
Or a boy princess. Isn't that fun?
Or woman king, like that movie that came out.
You still will lose your eyelashes.
Okay. They get burned right off.
Yeah, as soon as you turn into a boy, your eyelashes are gone. Anyway, that's Neopets. These olds are Neopets. They don't have eyelashes, even though they're girls. You do have one more thing you want to talk about.
I have one thing. I feel like you'll appreciate it, specifically. One of the things that Steinbach talks about in Shimmering Images is, like, the fantastical spectacle nature of the biography Man and a Woman, saying, I want to stress, this grates against the discursive authority of medical and legal experts who were consulted for the many press articles about her case. Through the flickering series of photo montages, the composite text of Man and a Woman establishes a sympathetic witnessing position of authority outside of any one of the characters. One of these, like, some of the fantastical elements range from the after-surgery narration of changed handwriting and voice apparently achieved through castration, quoting, he gazed at the card and failed to recognize the writing. It was a woman's script.
Whoa, my handwriting changed from gender surgery.
another quote saying, the nurse reports that Lily's voice also seems to have changed into a splendid soprano and remarks, simply astounding.
she was just really feeling herself after surgery, I think, is what it is, right? But then they were like, wow, this is magical.
And Steinbach goes on to write, saying, to skeptics and disbelievers, Jack Halberstam reminds that when we read transgender lives, complex and contradictory as they may seem, it is necessary to read for the life and not for the lie. Dishonesty, after all, is another word for narrative. And I think that that's very fitting for this movie.
You know what? You know what? I'll take it, Jack.
Yeah.
He's on to, every once in a while. He's on to something.
Every now and then, you know, a broken clock. You know what they say?
My favorite line.
I know that is Aaron's favorite line. Yeah, man. Ooh, Jack Halberstam is a broken clock. But then, like, I read his piece about how Austin Powers is high drag, and I'm like, you know what? You're so
kind of right. Yeah.
And then I read his piece about how, like, Homestuck is epic, and I'm like, you know what? You're wrong.
I disagree with that. I didn't know.
And then he's like, Dory's a butch fish. Why? Because I say so. I'm like, again, missing the mark, my man. However, apparently he's a very nice and normal guy in real life. I believe that. And
huge Alan fan.
Is he?
Well, I just imagine, because, well, I don't know, but I just mean, I wonder if, like, how informed the argument about Dory being a butch fish is informed by
He said that it has nothing to do with that.
Bullshit. He's lying.
He said that the reason that Dory is a butch fish is because she's very forgetful, forgets everything that she does, and isn't that
queering... Is that a butch trait?
Isn't that queering memory, in a way?
Shut up.
Does not.
Yeah, it's something of that nature. In Gaga feminism, he just has a bunch of really abhorrent takes. That book is really, it's an interesting read, I'll tell you that. Gaga feminism. It also is just using Lady Gaga's name to try to make Jack Halberstam money, and he admits that. He's like, this book has nothing to do with Lady Gaga. I'm just saying, you gotta go Gaga.
Just like this episode almost has nothing to do with, and this movie has nothing to do with Lily Alvey.
Yeah. Wow, bringing it back around. Yeah. Anyway.
There's so much queer theory out there that, like, I would say is dangerous if straight people read queer theory, but they don't, so it's fine.
They don't. Yeah, exactly. However, they do go see The Danish Girl.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The Danish Girl, I think, is dangerous. The, like, little epigraph at the very end where it's like, you know, the transgender community today is still inspired by Lily Alvey's bravery and, like, all this shit.
So many,
like,
trans people don't even know that Lily Alvey existed, which is
fair
at this point, given how much of her life has been erased from fucking history.
And in part because of this movie.
And replaced with bullshit like The Danish Girl, the book and the movie.
I think the movie is actually, like, the movie is in itself erasing that history.
Yeah.
Even though it tries to frame itself as, like, doing a favor to the, like, transgendered community. It really feels like it is, like, it doesn't feel that different from, like, the book burning, because I'm going to be honest. I know that's pretty harsh, but, like, listen, if you had Nicole Kidman, I would give this movie a 5. But you don't, so I'm going to give it a 1 out of 5. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. Real. Totally real.
Yeah, it was bad. Would not recommend.
It was also boring.
It was really boring.
If the movie was at least, like, camp or, like, fun, you know what I mean? Like, if the whole movie had, like, the same kind of, like, gag-worthy, like, sauce that the tucking scene had, I would almost be able to, like, read into it as, like, oh, this movie's fucking nuts. But it's so boring.
I think I needed, like, The Rock to be there.
Yeah, I needed The Rock to play Lily Alvey.
I needed The Rock to be Hans. Oh, I forgot to say to you guys. Was Hans serving Carlisle from Twilight to anyone else?
You're right. You're actually right.
Yeah, you're so right, actually.
I saw him
and
I was like,
Kristen Stewart in there. Get Kristen Stewart. Get The Rock.
Okay.
But like, get like modern Kristen. Like, I want like greasy mullet Kristen Stewart. And I just want like Kristen, completely like anachronistic.
I want Kristen to be Lily, probably. Yeah. Right? And yeah. Who are we casting as
that bodybuilder girl from Love Lies Bleeding?
That's our next. That's our next episode.
Really?
Yeah. That's a really good.
I love that movie.
Let's remake The Danish Girl, but it's just Love Lies Bleeding.
Yeah,
I love that. Dude, that movie made me so horny.
Dude, me fucking too.
Oh my god, dude.
Me and June saw it together, and there were like a group of like cis lesbians sitting behind us who like audibly went like "ew" at the toe sucking, and me and June looked at each other like these fucking cowards.
There's no way. Oh my god, you need to come to New York. People were like cheering.
People were sucking toes.
Well,
man.
You know, I'll see what I think when I watch it next week.
I wanted to do this bit while we're still recording. Absolutely cut this if this doesn't go off. Oh, I have this piece of fan mail here. Let me open this up.
Sammy's looking at a blank page right now.
Don't ruin this.
It says, you guys should do an episode on Arcane, the League of Legends show, and have your friend Samantha, who's played League of Legends, explain the League of Legends lore to you, because there is lesbianism in that show, sort of.
Oh.
Just putting that out there.
You know, alright, well, I mean, if a fan asks, we have to do
it. Yeah, a fan did ask. You know, I'm just saying.
They went so far as to write us a letter. We really should.
Season 2's coming out, you know, perfect time.
Oh my god.
All right. I know a lot of gays who love Arcane, you so. Know,
it might be time.
But if you want Samantha to come back.
And do Arcane.
You should email us at Aaron@gaysgays.com.
Not you, Samantha.
Not me, Samantha.
The non-Samantha listener. Else.
Or I would love to be back on the show to talk about something good. There would be a nice change of pace from the last, like, 5 episodes. I've never been on the show for anything that's, like, I've never been positive on the show, and I feel really bad about it.
Jupiter Ascending! What are you saying? How could you?
Sammy hated that one.
I know. I know.
Jupiter Ascending. Oh, yeah. That one was, yeah.
Even I hated it.
Yeah, we all hated it.
But it wasn't nearly as bad as Danish Girl.
All right, we gotta go.
Any other thoughts?
Don't watch the movie. Don't watch the Danish Girl.
But, like, do research. Like, look up, like, any of the essays or, like, companion books about Lily Elbe. Like, because all that history is really... Look up the actual art of Gerda.
I was just gonna say, check out Gerda Wegner's art. It's very, very beautiful.
I was actually saying, I'd be totally down to put together, like, some kind of, like, Twitter thread of, like, what I found, like, researching this book and, like, putting together, like, a reading list of, like, some of the interesting stuff I found about all of this discourse.
If you want to do it on your personal Twitter, we will retweet. And
yeah, I would love to. I'm much more normal on there.
And actually, this is a good time. Would you like to promo your Twitter?
No.
So everybody can follow.
Not really, no.
No, nothing to promo this time.
Can we promo my Neopets account?
Yeah. Your Neopets username going to be?
You can find me by my Neopet. I will be making
the Danish girl
Neopet.
You can be Nobi Nobi Girl if you want to on Neopets.
Might do that. I'll make both
because then you could have one as your side
That's
account.
True. I'll be Nobi Nobi Girl because I feel like that's like kind of in line with like the Neopets like aesthetic. And you can find me by my first Neopet, which will be named the Danish Girl.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to promo today.
Yeah, that sounds great. Find Samantha on Neopets. She's just starting her account. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for joining us, Samantha. So glad to have you back.
I had a great time.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. I genuinely love doing the show. I know I'm cynical about some of the media we engage in, but I genuinely have a great time every time I'm here. And the Gaze offices.
Yes, in the Gaze offices. And I'm so glad that you are staying in the area, too, so that you can come back.
Yes.
And continue. I mean... Obviously, like, even if you move somewhere else, we could still have you on via Zoom.
Oh, I'll be coming back to the Gaze offices.
Yes.
On the 80th floor of the Millennium Tower.
Anyway, thank you for listening to all of our listeners. You should follow us on Twitter at Gaze, where you can DM us. You can also email us at Aaron@gazegaze.com. Send us thoughts, ideas, recommendations, fun facts about Lily Elbe, anything you have to say about the Danish Girl, anything you have to request of Samantha.
I'll do it.
You can pass your message along.
I'll watch any media. I'm like a garbage disposal.
We're always on the hunt for like a good transgender lesbian content.
I know.
It's hard to find. Ugh.
It should be easier.
When I come up with something that I really feel very strongly that this is good, and I've experienced it prior to pitching it to you, I will pitch it to you. Because that's my promise. I keep on finding things and I'm like, this seems great. And I pitch it before I watch it, and then we watch it, and I'm like, this fucking blows, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I also want to say thank you to Kate and Leslie of Neon and Nude for letting us use their songs Look and Love and You Pretty Thing for our intro and our outro music. You should go buy their album at neonandnude.bandcamp.com. Oh my god, there's some crazy thunder going on out here. And like we said, next episode we will be back for Love Lies Bleeding.
Yeah. I'm
looking forward to it.
Super good movie.
Get horny. Watch Love Lies Bleeding.
I just thought of something for the Love Lies Bleeding episode. A suggestion. You can completely ignore it. I would recommend watching Pumping Iron 2 as a double feature with Love Lies Bleeding.
Oh, yeah.
It's a,
that's a good suggestion.
Yeah, it's a documentary about the, about, like, the actual competitive, like, weightlifting or bodybuilding competition that is in Love Lies Bleeding. And it's a documentary about that. And it really goes into, like, the film is overtly about the discourse of, like, what defines a, like, feminine-presenting bodybuilder and, like, what makes somebody a woman. It's actually a very interesting movie in that it talks about that. Like, there's, like, a lot of, like, interest in disqualifying, like, this really, like, beefy woman because she doesn't look like a woman.
Yeah, woof. I'm definitely going to check that out because, yeah, that's...
Yeah.
It's on YouTube for free.
Okay.
The discourse. Good to know.
It's only, like, an hour and some change.
You said it's Pumping Iron, too.
The Women is the subtitle.
Okay, Pumping Iron 2, The Women?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, anyway.
Until next time, I'm Erin.
And I'm Erin.
And I'm Samantha. I won't be here, but I'm still Samantha.
You'll be here in our hearts.
Thank you.
And we are gay.
Yay,
thank you. I'm also gay. Just
be clear. Oh, we're aware. Okay. Samantha. Bye.